I'd like to welcome you to our next discussion in our Global Health Perspectives podcast. My name is Derek Yach. I'm the president of the Foundation for a Smoke-Free World, and we've been looking at a range of issues and people who straddle the issues and the worlds of smoking and tobacco and the harsh reality of the current COVID-19 pandemic. Today, I'm very pleased to have Nilesh Jain join me from Mumbai in India. Nilesh has a background as a serial entrepreneur, having been trained at Carnegie Mellon and many other places. He spent 20 years in Silicon Valley. He's been much sought after by leading policy groups, including the Niti Aayog of India and the World Economic Forum, ready to provide insights into how we can use technologies to address many of the healthcare issues of our day in developing countries and, of course, with applications in developed countries. These insights, of course, today we know are absolutely crucial if we're going to be able to address the current pandemic and to solve the future inequities in healthcare. But let me just start off by asking Nilesh maybe just to describe how he got into this field, and then how did he get drawn to the field of tobacco control? Nilesh.
Yeah, hi Derek, this is Nilesh. This is very passionate to me. I've been in the healthcare space for a while, founded companies in manufacturing of orthopedic implants. And then I ventured out into a new venture in the vaping industry. And that's when I realized how prevalent smoking and tobacco was in India, especially in developing nations. And, you know, the leading cause of death that can be preventable, especially from both smokeless tobacco as well as smoking tobacco. And that led me to asking certain questions in healthcare as well as tobacco control is, you know, what can we do differently to look at two aspects? One, bring in technology that can really help us solve the problem at hand. And then two, how do we work with policymakers to influence what we're doing using the latest technology to go help save lives? And these are the two, you know, primary factors that drove me into one, working with the Smoke-Free Foundation and really focusing on tobacco. So we're in the process of also establishing our harm reduction center for innovation in India with Smoke-Free Foundation to really focus on data and evidence, especially relating to smokeless tobacco, as well as cessation around smokeless tobacco.
Thanks, Nilesh. And I think just on that, many people don't realize that India is sadly the capital of the world when it comes to oral cancer. And I know that that is the area where you're starting to look at what are the constituents and the variability of the smokeless products on the Indian market.
Yes, absolutely. This is one of the leading causes of death, which can be managed. Some of the work that we're doing, especially from a technology perspective in oral cancer, is really look at the rural areas in India and early identification. So we're investing in certain technology that can really help us understand, one, how can we detect some of these cancers that are coming in with smokeless tobacco users? Also, the second challenge is the kind of population that we deal with, especially in smokeless. Access to care, access to basic, funds is not available in India for us to really make a massive impact. So technology can really help us look at it from that perspective.
Yeah, and I think in the experience I've had in working with you and other colleagues, it's very clear that the time that people come forward with oral cancer is sadly often too late to have an impact on survival. And if that is the case, of course, in our current pandemic, we're going to face other realities when it comes to access to healthcare. So it would be good maybe just for you to give a sense of, first of all, how are you experiencing the pandemic in India? Your living circumstances. What has the lockdown meant for you and your family and your work?
Oh, it's a whole new world. So I was just looking at the numbers this afternoon. You know, we are at 5,000 plus cases, 400 plus cured cases as of today, and 150 deaths. For a population of 1.3 billion, we've done effectively a fairly job so far. What is yet to be seen is in the next couple of weeks how these numbers ramp up, number one. And number two, a lot of questions come into our mind whether these numbers are really a reflection of the true numbers that are happening in reality, especially given rural areas and the access to these rural areas. And that's going to be a challenge moving forward because, if you're not able to to get the right numbers, if you're unable to really assess what is happening in the rural parts of India, then we may end up making decisions that may not be really helpful in the long run, especially in terms of containment and quarantine, especially related to COVID-19.
Yeah, and in your daily life, what does lockdown mean for you and for people in the community?
Oh, I think it's never been experienced, and I haven't stepped out of my home for the last 16 days, and this is very similar to a lot of people that I've talked to. You know, the challenge on the other side is when we look at people who can't afford the luxuries that we can, and you look at people who are on daily wages, they can't have the same luxury of not stepping out of the home. So it's been really challenging on both fronts. One, when we look at a larger class of population that was mainly surviving on daily labor and daily wages, which is, you know, close to 400 million plus in India, life has been very hard for them. I mean, right from getting basic necessities of food and medicine to just the overall lifestyle change. You cannot even imagine of number of people living in a single home and all cramped up together in the same home for the next, you know, last 15 days. So obviously there are a lot of challenges in terms of the physical aspect of the lockdown. The commercial and the economic aspect of the lockdown has been just terrible. Average earning of these laborers was, you know, less than $3 to $4 a day, and that's vanished for the last 15, 16 days. We're seeing a lot of NGOs, we're seeing a lot of, government helping with the situation, but I think a lot more needs to be done.
Yeah, so Nilesh, let's turn to some of the things many people outside of India maybe not that aware of, and that's the technological progress and how that may be starting to be ramped up for good. Be good just to talk about what is the access of the population to cell phones and smartphones, and how that is potentially important for spreading good advice, and is it being used?
Yes, we are embarking on using a lot of the cell phone technology for managing, one, the COVID crisis, but also I think what it has helped us realize is, in the long run, how are we going to leverage technology to really improve access to care? And fortunately, I operate in this space along with the focus on tobacco. You know, I'm a co-founder of a healthcare company that is actually deploying last mile care and access to care in rural India. And I'll give you some statistics. The penetration of cell phone and smartphones is massive. I mean, we're surprised with the level of people, the age group of people having access to smartphones. We underestimated that. When we went to rural parts of India to really deploy the last mile care through health workers, we've got super trained health workers who can really help and augment the doctor ratio in India. And we've delivered more than 60,000 outpatient sessions at a cost of less than a dollar. So if you look at the way we've leveraged technology, it's massive. And I think we can do a lot more. You mentioned about oral cancer, and we, you know, talk about tuberculosis. I think there is a lot of technology that can be leveraged right now, you know, given the devices and given the tools that we have access to into rural parts of India for early identification of oral cancer, for early identification of TB. One of the biggest challenges that we see is the aggravation among the TB patients that are consuming tobacco, you know, especially smoking tobacco as well as smokeless tobacco. I think early identification of TB and early treatment plans can really help save thousands of lives. And we're seeing that impact can be really significant leveraging technology that we're trying to introduce as a part of access to health.
Yeah, and I'm very pleased you mentioned tuberculosis, because many people, when they think of smoking, don't think about the link to tuberculosis. And the Indian data suggests that almost 800,000 of the new tuberculosis cases, which is a total of 2.5 million a year, are ascribed to smoking. So any impact that both has in better detection, but also the joint management of people who are under treatment for tuberculosis and smoking, will have a huge public health benefit.
Yes, I absolutely agree. And one of the things that we've learned, the challenges or the ground realities in India, is the time from the identification of a TB patient to the time when the treatment is started, there's a lag of about 7 to 10 days. And there's enough research being done in this space. Our objective with access to care is really reduce that time. So let's say if you identify the patient today, the treatment plan should actually start from tomorrow itself. And why can't we do that? You know, given the tools that we have, from teleconsultation to telemedicine to devices, this can be really started within a 24-hour period. So the question is really, can we provide access using the latest technology, especially in rural parts of India? And I would say this is also true to a large part, even in urban areas, where access to care is very limited in the periphery of urban areas. And then second is also, you know, for a large population that is below the poverty line, which means they don't have enough money to spend on basic healthcare. And I think second objective of access to care is also bringing the cost down to zero. And how do we actually do that using technology?
Well, one of the things I was really intrigued at when spending time with biddy rollers, and these are mainly women who roll a tendu leaf and put tobacco in it, and that's how almost 80 to 90 million people consume tobacco in India. What was interesting was that the people involved in the biddy trade were identifying the woman for payment using very advanced facial recognition systems on an iPhone. And many outside of India may be unaware of the very sophisticated, almost universal access to identification using facial recognition, which holds enormous power and promise to actually identify patients, to maintain them in the system. And I imagine that must be something that you're using as well, which must have been a huge investment of government.
Absolutely. I think now we are in the process, you know, given what COVID has done to the entire infrastructure, you know, right from the government sector to private sector, looking at a lot of innovative technologies and in the process of deploying this. I think this is a journey. This is not going to be just a reaction to what we're doing for COVID, but also I think it's going to help us prepare our infrastructure and leverage technology for the long run.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I know that during your involvement with the World Economic Forum was this period when the Fourth Industrial Revolution discussions were happening, looking at the opportunities of new technology to solve these problems. And it seems that India is really on the cusp of being able to do that at massive scale. What do you think are some of the constraints to making even greater progress?
I think one of the biggest constraints that I see is just the rollout and the deployment of how we're leveraging technology. One of the challenges, you know, democracy brings in is also choices. And I think the biggest challenge here in India right now, and we're practically seeing this, is how do we actually push a solution to the masses to make sure that at the government level, we have enough information and data collected. And I think that's going to be a challenge, is making sure that we are all going in the same direction, in the right direction, to actually enforce and make sure the technology is working for us. I also, you know, see a phase of mass confusion right now as to what, you know, what's the right technology, what are the right decisions. And I think, you know, this may take a year to 18 months for us to figure out the right course of strategy of moving forward. And I'll give an example. Primary healthcare centers in India are completely in a chaos. Simple technology that we've seen across the world, at a cost of less than $10,000, a primary healthcare center can really be a super diagnostic center. So I think the decision-making of saying, you know, picking the right process, picking the right technology, and really empowering these primary healthcare centers to enable, you know, set clinical protocols to make sure that we are getting the right information, we're having the right treatment plans right at the ground, right, is going to be a critical challenge for us to go deploy this.
Yeah, just one last question on in terms of the training of the computer scientists and the entrepreneurs able to do this. It does see that India's well-placed, but I'm sure there could be a lot more done. If you look around the world, many of the leaders of the corporations in this field actually come from India. And so they're having an impact back through the Indian diaspora on India itself. But presumably there must be an enormous effort to build the capacity in India. Is there more that's needed?
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail on the head. And I think a part of the work that we're doing with the foundation, especially on the research area, is actually to build capacity. There's a huge gap. You know, how much of a pride I take in saying, you know, we have the right talent pool in India. I think the structure to do research and to bring in innovation that can be scaled at an international level is a huge gap. I also find there's a lot of gap in capacity, especially in certain research areas. And if you look at, you know, biosciences, we look at, you know, the field that we're working in, especially in tobacco research, it's hard to find even researchers in this space who can actually, you know, pull together the next 5, 10, 15 years and be very focused on what we're trying to do. And I think it comes back to the determination of the country to say, we will build capacity in these verticals and make sure there's enough dedicated resources, not only now, but for the next 15, 20 years to actually start doing grassroots research. And I think that's a big gap. And I can look at multiple verticals where we're seeing this gap come up now. And as simple as, you know, being able to provide rapid tests for COVID, we're still relying on imports. Yeah. Where the technology is very simple, right? So if you go back to capacity and building capacity, we could have done this 3 years ago.
Well, Nilesh, I want to thank you enormously for sharing your views, and more than your views, your vision that India is sitting on a technological cusp of change. And while things are going to look bleak for a while, underlying that, often it's the crisis that spurs the realization that it's going to be through technology and science innovations in a democratic country that can actually make the biggest difference and ideally help all of us worldwide. So let me just thank you, and please, of course, stay safe, and all of you stay safe. Follow the rules, as Nilesh clearly is. And importantly, learn from what he said about thinking positively about the future. We can use this period to create a better future for all of us. I hope that you listen to the podcast and respond to us at podcast@smokefreeworld.org. And we look forward to being in touch in future. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Derek.